Thursday, March 24th.
I'll do that again. It is 11:02. It is Thursday, March 24th. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Leon County Research and Development Authority Executive Committee meeting. I will call this to order. Introduction of any guests?
Not really a guest, but Melissa's on the call.
Hey, Melissa. Approval of participation by electronic means.
Move approval, Mr. Chair.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
We are, Dave, welcome to the meeting.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
The Ron, are there any modifications to the agenda?
I have none.
Is there any public comment?
We have not received any.
All right. Item number six, approval of draft meeting minutes, January 20th, 2022.
I'll move it.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, it's been properly moved and seconded. In favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Item number seven, audited financial statements for fiscal 2021. Ron?
Would our treasurer like to take this one, sir?
Well, let me just, again, compliment our staff and compliment staff over Top Core. I'm very appreciative of what we have been able to achieve administratively. We have set the stage, I think, to say we got the best audits that you could ever hope to have. No comments on virtually anything at all that we were doing inappropriately or even suggestions of how we could do things better. I thank you, Ron, for your leadership. I thank you, Talcor folks, for your support. Very well done. Thomas Howe Ferguson, I am confident, does a very thorough job of their audit work. It came back again with high fives. So Ron and I are both signing the letter. We present that to the executive committee for its consideration. It will then need to go to the board for its approval. Chair recommends approving the document upon your review. Excuse me, not the chair, the treasurer. The treasurer.
Yeah, and actually, it's the audit committee. Because Dave is not a voting member of the audit committee. So the audit committee did meet and reviewed all of the information and concurred that it should be presented to the executive committee for approval and then to the board for its ratification.
So because
the treasurer doesn't think it'd be appropriate for he who is having essentially his books audited to be in there voting on the process. So I attend the meeting in case something comes up that I should be aware of or could add a comment to, but otherwise the treasurer does not vote on that process. But at this point, I recommend it to the executive committee for your approval and subsequently on to the board for its subsequent review and approval.
All right, so because the committee has made the recommendation, it does not require a motion, correct?
Yes.
It requires a motion. Okay. So, is there a motion to approve? Is that Dave's? Okay.
And then I'll second.
Okay. So yeah. It's been moved and, properly seconded. Any discussion? Ron, thank you for your leadership. It's great to have, a very clean audit reports. We appreciate you and all that you're doing.
Thanks.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, it's unanimous. Item number eight, Thomas Al Ferguson Professional Auditing Services Agreement Extension. And Ron.
So we discussed this with the audit committee as well, and considering where we're at with the projects that we've got going on and the potential for a single audit requirement because of our federal grants that will be coming up next year or potentially the year after, we think it would be appropriate to go ahead and extend the auditor's professional services agreement for another 2 years as provided for in the original contract at the rates that they have specified. In the in your packet, you'll see a history of their fees. And it
17% or something like that. Mm-hmm. Well, it was reasonable.
Yeah, it's. Yeah. So you can see when we put it back out to bid, they actually lowered it 11% and then had 3% increases over here. Although when we did the last 2-year extension, they didn't raise it. And so if you look at where they're going up, they're going up 10% from this year. But if you look at annualized since 27, it's the equivalent of what would have been a 4%, even though they didn't get the 4%.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then another 3% the year after. So it seems to be a pretty reasonable,
right.
Especially, I mean, even on a dollar amount, if you think about what they do.
Oh, cool.
it's
yeah, and with the processes that we are having to add to the features this year and next year, it's appropriate, I think, that they're needing to do more work and that they'd be compensated a little more.
Very good.
So the audit committee recommends that and requests your approval of the second amendment to the professional services agreement to extend the agreement for 2 years at a cost of $19,800 for the 22 fiscal year and $20,400 for the 23 fiscal year.
So, Mr. Chair, I move approval of the audit committee recommendation as stated.
Second.
Okay, so the approval of the services agreement has been properly moved. It's been seconded. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye. Does that need to go to the board now for action as well?
All the decisions that we make in the executive committee are sent on the consent agenda, at least for ratification by the full board.
Very good. So item number 9, NAI Talcor Property Management and Accounting Services Agreement Extension.
So kind of along the same lines, we're in this boat again. I think we did another extension last year after the original 3-year agreement. They did 2.5% a year increases, but last year they did it with no increase. And they're looking for a 4% increase for the upcoming year. Now, I do think it's going to be appropriate at some point to go back out to bid with this. But when we do that, we have to be prepared to make a change. Because I think when you look at what is required to make a change, it's going to be a heavy lift, because you're talking about changing all of our accounting systems and retraining people on and how to deal with our tenants and all of our policies and procedures and all of the institutional knowledge that's been developed within Talcor over the last. Since 2010, I think, something like that. So the last time we went out to bid, we did get some very good pricing out of Beck. Yeah, I think you were on that committee. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of discussion about just that. Mm-hmm. Were the fees reasonable considering what we all knew? Because when you look at what we're paying, it's about $80,000 a year, $90,000 a year. We have pretty much a full-time maintenance person. We have, a part-time property manager. We have an accounting staff. There's a lot wrapped up into that. And so the concern is that, one, did they really fully understand, what it is they were providing? Were they just, not saying they were, but maybe they were just trying to get the business, and get in, and then, would we risk the fees going up after that if they came back? And then also considering what's the cost of the change. As I mentioned, there's a lot involved in changing. Just at this point in time, I don't think it makes sense for us to spend time on that for what, could be some substantial savings, but in the scope of everything else that we're working on, it doesn't seem to be the highest priority item that we've got to be focused on. But also, I don't want to go through this process and come back to the same conclusion, which is it's too much to change right now. And I don't want to burn that bridge with the other firm, because they were clearly distraught over the fact that they had this low bid and still didn't get it. So I think when the next time we go out to bid, we need to be absolutely prepared to make a change. I think it's only fair to the other bidders. So my recommendation, though, is that we extend the agreement for another year and then reconsider next year what we're going to do.
It says that there are that it expires September 30th, 2022 with additional 1 year term. So that's unlimited on 1 year term.
Yeah, it's open-ended.
So staff has made the recommendation to extend the agreement. Is there a motion to approve that?
There's a motion. Yeah, I approve, make a motion to approve the extension of the property management and accounting services agreement.
Okay. Second. All right. So it's been properly moved and seconded. Is there discussion? I'd like to just go on record. In the economic environment that we are in today, with all of the uncertainty, I think that the uncertainty typically breeds fear. Fear breeds people, when my opinion is that when people bid on services in an environment where there is economic fear, the price goes up.
Absolutely.
So I am completely in favor of this this extension. I think that it's very prudent to stay with where we're at. Any other discussion?
No, I wholeheartedly just agree with that. I mean, I think we're going to get something that we don't want or can't afford by poking the bear. So let's keep with what we know.
Okay. Okay, so it's been moved. It's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Oh, that's unanimous. Okay. Number 10, Florida State University Research Foundation loan for North Florida Innovation Labs.
So before we get into the loan documents, and we're not going to do a deep dive. We just got these red lines back from the Research Foundation last night about 5:30. So we haven't, Melissa and I were on a call this morning about 8:00, just kind of touching base on it. But our intent is to do a more thorough review of their changes and make sure we have full documents by the board packets going out next week. So, but before we get into the loan documents, let me kind of update you on where we're at in the process and where the loan fits and why we need it.
Ron, we can't see that screen if we need to.
Yeah, I'm not there yet.
Okay.
I'm having a little, there we go. It is harder to do this than you think. Looking to your right.
Definitely is.
Okay, now I'm gonna share the screen for you. Okay, can you see that now?
Yes.
I'm trying to make it as big as I can. All right. So we received our base bids, and the base bid was $21,995,000, and that's for the construction of the building and all the site work. We had alternatives in the bid package to both add and deduct, so we had some flexibility to get there, depending on what the bid looked like. It wasn't enough. So we went back, if you recall, and requested the ability to do competitive negotiation. And council weighed in, and EDA said okay. And we went back to the low bidder and said, what can you do? We'll call it value engineering. I'm not sure it's technically the value engineering process, but what can we add or subtract from the project, adjust to get where we need to get to with our budget? They knew they couldn't get the whole way there. So we had to come up with some other pieces. So there were two other things that we were able to get done. One, the EDA said you can use your contingency for your construction budget. Okay, we had $1.3 million in contingency in the project. Now, realistically, we can't use the whole contingency to fit and cover, you know, the shortfall that we have, but you still need to have a contingency. So talking to Lewis and Whitlock, they thought that 3% of the building cost would be sufficient and we could move the rest up into the construction budget.
So a 3% contingency?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's what you'll see down here. That's 3% of the building cost. So the other piece is the loan. You know, the $4 million loan helps us get there as well. So right now we're estimating that by tweaking the alternatives and the value engineering, we can save the $477,000 that we need to get there. We have a list. We're going to present that to the oversight committee next week to get into the weeds on that a little bit. I didn't think it was appropriate to do it here. But just to say that we feel pretty good about the changes that they have proposed. Most of them are things like getting rid of redundancies, where, you know, we had backup boilers and backup. We had an extra autoclave machine. So those are some of the big things. We had little things that were, you know, like changing out, you know, 1 gallon plants for 3 gallon plants, you know, just little, anything we could do. But that also allowed us to take and do a couple of additive things put back into the project that we thought we were going to have to take out. For example, roller shades. We think we're going to be able to put the roller shades back in. We knew we were going to add them eventually, but we'll see where we're at when we get to the end of the project. But the big thing is the deck off the back. We had that as not being included in the base bid. But by going through these other things, we think we're going to be able to put that back in because it's not a huge number, like $24,000 or something.
I think $19,000.
Yeah.
So yeah, and we couldn't do anything comparable before, during, after.
Yeah, to later add that would be very expensive, and we think it's a very important element of the operation of the facility. So, so those are some of the things that we looked at, and we had a lot of help from the contractor. They're very motivated to work on this project. So that puts our total building cost budget at $21,517,721. And these are the other elements of the budget that have already been awarded, that have already, you know, that's matches up with the EDA budget. So we're at our total then is at $23,751,696. And we balance that with the $4 million loan from the FSU Research Foundation. That's what we need to get that done. Now, if we can come up with some more savings here, and we think we will actually exceed that savings, that's the plug. Mm-hmm. We're gonna do that because we know we need a little more cushion in that contingency. And so that's where we'll look at that a little closer and have something for the Infill Oversight Committee next week to evaluate those things.
And this will be a CM at risk contract.
No, right? It's a hard bid.
Okay.
So it's a fixed price. So now if they come back and say, hey, Lewis and Whitlock, you didn't think about this, okay, mm-hmm. and it's not in your drawing, then we have to do a change order and that's going to come out of contingency.
Okay.
So that's the segue into why the $4 million. And fortunately, FSU was amenable to doing something and to adding to the original $3 million commitment. The bad news is it opened the door to renegotiating some of the terms. One of the terms was the interest rate on the additional million. Now they held the 2.98%. But unfortunately, I think the Fed came out and made their announcement on the rate increase about the same time we were asking for the extra million. So they went to 4.5% on the extra million. They also came back and are asking, and I think reasonably, to include the lease on the building as part of the security interest. And Melissa can talk a little bit more about that. But it doesn't make sense for us if they had to foreclose on the loan, then for us to still have the lease with the Northwood Innovation Labs or IPTLH wouldn't make sense, right? I mean, so this gives them basically, we're going to pledge that as collateral.
And Ron, so, is that decreased interest rate based on that million being first out or last out?
Well, and that is actually one of the details that I have on my list to talk to Melissa about. I wanted to see how they implemented that in the documents we got last night. But my inclination would be that would be the last dollars out on the higher interest rate. That's what I would press for.
Why would we want to get that higher interest rate the first out?
We want it last out, right?
I think you wanted the higher interest rate part to be the first out, so we get rid of the higher interest rate first.
It depends on if you actually have to use it. I think the idea, if I'm understanding the capital stack, is that you would, the last $1 million in the capital stack has the highest interest rate. And so the lower interest rate, by definition, would come out first because it was applied first.
And Dave, I think where you're going to is we don't have to draw the entire $3 million. If we don't use the entire $3 million, if we only used $1 million, then we could draw just $1 million on the lower interest rate.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to say I want that higher interest rate to be last in force and first out. Right. I may have said it wrong a minute ago, but the document needs to state that that'd be first out.
Or sunset. Right.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Dave.
I do.
Okay. So what I've asked Melissa to do is just to sort of run you through the agreements. We're not going to do a deep dive on it. I just want her to kind of tell you, because there's a few agreements here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different documents. And just to kind of give you a high level view of what those documents are and, you know, what are the risks? What are some of the things that we need to think about as we're getting ready to approve these documents? So just at a very high level, unless you have some questions, but I think it's going to be hard to do until you actually see the documents. But.
Well, and before Melissa gives the update, the thing that you guys have heard me ask this question several times already, and now it's even that much more important, we're going to need to understand the cash flow of this building, because right now we're making it that much harder to not be upside down.
That's next on the list.
That okay.
So yeah, the plan is we talked briefly about the loan docs and the risks. We've got a pro forma for you.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk about a schedule.
I'll do that.
Okay.
Okay, great. And first, Ron, happy birthday to you. I know it's a milestone, but I'll let you share that if you choose to do so. I know you all are very I know y'all are very sophisticated in this audience, so I won't belabor the loan documents, but at Ron's request, and as he just said, I just thought I'd run through them big picture. We have a loan agreement, which is essentially the overarching document that sets forth the agreement between the parties and really provides more detail to the agreement that was summarized in the loan commitment letter, and identifies the reps and warranties of LCRDA, which I'll talk about in a minute, and also identifies the draw schedule, which Ron and I need to spend some time talking about what that process will be as LCRDA requests funds over the life of the loan. And then also identifies the various agreements between the parties that we will enter into. The agreements to repay the funds are set forth in two separate promissory notes. That was at the request of FSU Research Foundation. One is, just to keep it easier, I think, really, one is for the $3 million at the lower interest rate. And then the other promissory note is for the $1 million at the higher interest rate. The repayment terms are basically the same, and the terms of the notes are the same. They're just, as I said, for I think bookkeeping purposes, they're just set forth on two different documents, one for the 3 million and one for the 1 million at the different rates. The mortgage is the, obviously evidence is the security interest to secure the repayment obligations. It is a second mortgage. And remember, it's a leasehold mortgage because we don't own the dirt outright. We only have a leasehold interest because we lease the real estate from the state of Florida under a long-term ground lease. This is a second mortgage because the EDA at the time of this loan closing with FSU Research Foundation, we will first record the EDA's mortgage. And I've been, Ron and I have been working with the EDA and their lawyer to negotiate that form. It's really a promulgated form by the EDA. And then it's, we work to make sure that it's complies with the Florida requirements. And so we have that approved form that's been given to FSU Research Foundation so they know what it looks like. So that'll get recorded first, and then the FSU Research Foundation mortgage will be recorded second. That includes, as Ron mentioned, the assignment of leases and rents language. That was not included in the original loan commitment letter. That was an additional negotiated term for the additional $1 million. It is a customary, as you probably all know, it is very customary in a commercial loan setting to have the leases and rents pledged as collateral. And the reason for that being lenders don't think it's fair that if a borrower defaults on their loan, the borrower gets to keep making money on the on the commercial building. And so that was what FSU Research Foundation asked for here. We're working very hard to make sure the language is specific so that the only rent that's being pledged as collateral to FSU Research Foundation is the rent that's being paid by NFIL to LCRDA. So that means that the membership fees that are paid are excluded and they're not being pledged as collateral.
If I could interrupt there for just a second. We are contemplating that and she says NFIL, IPTLH is DBA NFIL. So we have NFIL the building, and then we have NFIL is the DBA for IPTLH. So it gets a little confusing here. But we intend to lease the building to IPTLH. Okay, so LCRDA leases the building to IPTLH. IPTLH, as you'll see on the pro forma that's coming up, they're going to have other sources of revenue. Okay, and IPTLH is not a party to this. So it's really just about what's being paid as a result of that lease between the two back to LCRDA. That's what's being pledged as collateral. Is that?
That's accurate.
And this, listen, I've been going back and forth on how to word that, but that's the intent, is it's just that piece. So we're not pledging anything that IPTLH is doing. It's just the rents that are paid. Now, we haven't written that lease yet. We're still looking at how we're going to do that because we have to factor in some other things like, you know, what's the nonprofit requirements to make sure that they're getting the right amount of charitable contributions even from us. So we're looking at all of that, but and we have a little time to accomplish that. But that is there, and for the reason that Melissa stated, is that it wouldn't make sense for us to be able to keep getting that revenue.
How's that first mortgage satisfied?
I'm sorry?
How is the first mortgage satisfied?
In other words, how is it paid off? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, how do we get released from the mortgage requirement the government?
They don't have a payoff in the sense that you have a dollar amount owed that's calculated by principal and interest. They have what's called a useful life calculation, and Ron might be able to describe it better, but it's based on a federal code definition. Ron, it's almost like a depreciation value, but Ron's probably able to describe it better than I am.
Actually, they established that as part of the award agreement. It's 20 years from as we found out, from the date of the award, not the date of completion of construction. So they call it useful life,
But again, why it starts at the date of award, I don't know, because you know it's not gonna, it's not useful for a few years, but which is fine. It's even better for us. So, but at the end of the 20 years, the EDA, you know, they pretty much wash their hands and say, thank you very much.
It's yours.
It's all yours.
Mm-hmm. And so at the end of that period, if there's still an outstanding balance on a loan to FSU Research Foundation, they're no longer in a second position. They're now in the first position.
First.
Correct.
Right.
But if it's the loan term is 12 years, so I think we'd have a different problem probably before okay. that. But and then Melissa's going to continue to talk about, I think, a little bit more about the what happens in the event of default. I think that's a really important piece for you to understand.
Right. So let me. I have two more documents I want to reference real quick. One is a security agreement, which is the what best the interest in the furniture, fixtures, and equipment recall under our agreement with FSU Research Foundation. They will get a first lien interest in the FF&E that LCRDA purchases with the loan proceeds. So if we use other sources of income to purchase equipment, FSU Research Foundation does not have a security interest in the equipment, but if we use the loan proceeds, then the security agreement and the UCC-1 that will get filed in the public records and the secured transaction registry will secure Florida State University's Research Foundation's security interest in the equipment. And then the last document.
Oh, I can interject on that point. Practically, you saw the budget. We're not going to have any money left over for FF&E. That was we threw that in there just in case. So if there is money, we know we're going to need it. We want to spend on that. We can. Bill has to go out and go raise that other money in the next 2 years. But just so you know, that's unlikely to happen.
The last document was called in the commitment letter a right of first refusal, and we batted around a right of first offer. We're now calling it a priority agreement. This is the document that allows Florida State a priority in certain space within the NFIL module spaces, module offices, module types. Once we reach 80% occupancy, that was originally in the commitment letter 85%, but that was another concession that was given in exchange for the additional $1 million. And then I guess I'll just add, as Ron mentioned, we didn't get these documents until late yesterday afternoon, and we've given them a cursory review. I'll just say that my initial thoughts are that, you know, as I mentioned before, I want to give extra scrutiny to that assignment of leases and rents language for the reasons I already mentioned, but also there were some additional representations and warranties that were added. And while I'm always worried about that, I want to make sure that language is as narrowly tailored as possible. I also want to be sure that that's not tied to any default language, or if it is, that that's also narrowly construed. And so that's a nice segue into the topic that Ron just mentioned, which is what is really the liability for LCRDA? I mean, obviously, if LCRDA fails to pay, there's certain remedies that the Research Foundation can take. And this is a non-recourse loan. So that means in the event that LCRDA defaults, Research Foundation can only come in and essentially foreclose on the property, which means it would have to pay off the EDA if the EDA is still within its 20-year period, which is why the value would become important. What, you know, there would have to be some assignment of value to what the EDA's interest in the real estate is, because that would be what FSU would have to pay off to satisfy the EDA, make it go away. Then FSU would become essentially the owner of the leasehold estate interest. And it would also become the owner then of the lease and rents income stream that's coming in from the rent based on the lease between LCRDA and IPTLH or NFIL that particular entity. And it could do that through the appointment of a receiver, through a receivership action or in a foreclosure proceeding, which is why I want to make sure those reps and warranties and those loan documents can't be the basis for declaring a default, because we don't want, we really don't want there to be a basis for a default at all, except for LCD, the LCRDA's failure to pay. And then not after your ability to have notice of an alleged default and the ability to cure that after a certain period of time. So you've really got all opportunity to know about any alleged, you know, instance of lack of payment and the ability to try to cure that before, you know, before they take any action. Let me look at my notes real quick, just for a minute, make sure that we're not missing anything here that I wanted to tell you. I think that hits the highlights. It does. Ron, did I miss anything that you wanted me to talk about?
I think that covers it pretty well. Two things I want to touch on briefly. One is just what she said about in the event of default, okay, FSU Research Foundation would have to buy out the EDA, okay? So based on fair market value, whatever that means. So it is not something that they're going to do, willy-nilly, okay, whatever the official term is. But, I mean, they're going to have to be willing to pay to get the rest of that interest. And am I correct that they would still have to, if there was some establishment of fair market value over and above whatever their interest is and whatever they pay to EDA, then they would have to pay us for that?
I believe that. Yeah, I think that's right. But let's talk through that with the offline, Ron, to make sure that we can clarify that. And I was just thinking while you were talking, it might even be helpful if we could give a for instance example when we meet with the board. Like a hypothetical, if the building's worth X, and in 2 years, give like maybe two examples that might be helpful. But we could talk through that.
So, but again, my point is that it's not something that they're going to do lightly. That's number one. Number two is they want this to succeed. Okay. Now I'm going through the negotiation process. I also understand that they have a legitimate interest in what they're foregoing in revenue on $4 million. You know, that, and it's not an interest rate, it's a return on investment. If it had been invested in the market somewhere, because that's what they're doing, is they're taking it out of the market, my understanding. So it's not, you know, it's not real cheap money for them. It's the opportunity cost is significant. So, but having said that, they want this to work. They really, really, the president definitely wants this to work. The Research Foundation wants it to work, but they're still treating it like a business deal.
Which they should.
Yeah. Okay. And then, and given that they want this to work, if it doesn't work and we end up in foreclosure, which nobody wants, my belief is, and this is just speculation on my part, that they would want to continue to operate it as a business incubator. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be good for us, but the objective would still be met. So just want to throw that out there.
And I'm on this board not as the representative of FSU, and so I certainly don't want to speak for the president. I don't want to speak for the vice president of research. I don't want to speak for the Research Foundation. But I agree with the sentiment that Ron described. This is an important, if you listen to President McCullough's comments about his vision, and specifically for the research enterprise, and as we've talked in this room about opportunities to commercialize research, this is an important part of that discussion. And so I do think that this is, I think FSU looks at this as an important element of a larger research ecosystem that everybody wants to see be successful. Ron, thank you for bringing up the opportunity cost, because that is a real concern, and it is being measured as the way the private sector would need to look at a regular business transaction. I would say under that umbrella, these terms are still very attractive relative to what we may be able to do in the private sector banking. So the fact that the university desires this and that they are supporting it, not just with the gift, but with the loan and now the extended loan, that's huge for us as LCRJ.
Yeah. And it keeps us moving forward.
Yeah.
That's, and we'll get to the pro forma, but that's the key to all of this. There's risk, certainly, but it buys us time. It lets us get the project going now. We don't incur additional costs of construction because we wait 6 months with the inflation and craziness going on that Tom can attest to. It gets us moving forward. And what it does is it pushes the burden onto us to go find the money. And that's still our intent. We're going to show you the pro forma, but the intent is not ever to get to that. If we do get to that, we still have to raise money. It's just in annual chunks, as you know, as opposed to one big chunk. So that's kind of where we're at. Okay. Anything else, Melissa?
So, Melissa, thank you for all of the heavy lifting and hard work. I know that in two rounds of loan documents, there's been that is a heavy lift. Was the initial draft of the loan documents, was that your responsibility, or was that FSU?
We prepared those.
Okay, so that you prepared the first round, they reviewed, and they provided comments back last night.
Correct.
Okay.
I will say that the this priority agreement, I drafted that based on language that I think a lot of you saw when we talked about doing the grant conversion. So we clearly defined, how they would be able to implement that. It's a lot like a right of first refusal. But what we're really talking about is a membership in the incubator. And the tricky part is that when they get to 80%, when we get to 80% occupancy, if the next person that wants to get into the incubator into a particular space, and we broke up the spaces by module types, so offices, big labs, small labs, that sort of thing, co-working space. As soon as one of those module types hits 80%, the next person who wants to get into that module type, FSU has a short period of time to take the rest of the 20%. Okay. If they say, hey, that particular lab, we want somebody else to come, and we've got somebody ready to go. And it's a short period of time, it's a couple of weeks. If they want it, they get to have it first. And then if they don't take the rest of it, we can put that person in something else. Okay. Or they can take the rest of it and we just say, sorry, we're full. We can't take it. That's the best we could come up with in terms of giving them something tangible to make sure that their folks are getting in. But here's the thing. I tried to tell this out of the gate. We expect you to take at least 50%, 75% of the space. We think if we're doing it right, you guys have the lion's share of the space anyway. So I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think and the other part is, if we're running 80% occupancy,
that's a good problem. Man.
That's a good problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, normal commercial occupancy rates, the turnover is what?
I don't know about an incubator.
No, any commercial.
You can't run an office building with 20% vacancy.
Yeah, you're not cash flow.
Is it 10%?
They usually run, banks usually run 5 or 7% vacancy.
Okay.
Yeah, less than 10 is, I think the atmosphere is getting thin.
Okay.
But this is a different
atmosphere. It is different. But again, we want to be 100%, but you do have a certain amount of turnover. And
So FSU doesn't have any rights to the first 80%?
No.
Okay, that's interesting.
And if they exercise their rights to take that next 20%, do they begin paying for that?
Yes.
Yeah.
They have to actually have qualified businesses
to go in.
To go into it. And we are the ones who determine whether or not they're qualified. So they can't put researchers in there. It has to be a business. It has to be an FSU affiliated business. And we define all of that in the agreement. It's not a long agreement, but I think it's pretty tightly defined. So I think it's a win-win for everybody. I think they get something, especially when the space gets tight, they have some preference.
Very good. All right, well, let's take a look at the pro forma.
Anybody else want anything on that?
I'm just going to grab the restroom real quick.
Okay, let's take a 3-minute break.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good. Ready?
Yeah, so Melissa has one more comment she wants to make, and then she'd like to dismiss if anyone doesn't have anything else for her.
That's fine.
But
we don't like hearing from her.
Counselor?
Thanks.
Her clock's ticking.
Apologies, but I thought about this on the break. I wanted to add one caveat about the security agreement, and that is that Ron and I didn't, that was a document that was new to us as of last night. And so the definition of what is being secured by that is a lengthy few pages that's attached as an exhibit. And we've not had a chance to go over that. And I think it's exceptionally broad. So if any of you are, you know, enjoying a beverage later tonight and reading through that and think we're giving away the world, we're not going to. I just wanted to caveat that we're going to spend some time working to narrowly tailor that. And then yes, I'm happy to drop off. Ron gave me a hint and said that I should vamoose so as not to
have
more expenses.
All right. Well, Counselor, thank you for all your hard work on this.
You're welcome. Everybody have a great day. See you.
Thanks, Melissa. Yeah, I also mentioned to Melissa that in my report, I want to talk about legal fees. So. All right, so the pro forma. So we've had this model for a while, and Bill and I kind of went back through it again this morning just to kind of see, you know, it's evolving, you know, as we learn different things, but it will give you a sense of some of the things that we're looking at and you know, show you the bad news if we actually don't raise the $4 million plus interest before we open the thing. It's a heavy lift, but it's not impossible. And I'm glad I got Bill here because he's making me feel a lot better about how possible it is. Okay. So and we can dive in as deep as you want to go or keep it high level and come back to it. But let me share this so they can see here as well. All right. Dave, can you see that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Make it bigger if that helps. Okay. So, you know, we built this kind of, you know, based on, at least on the revenue piece here on the rentable space. These are the actual square footages and number of spaces that we have in the design now. Bill looked at sort of comparables based on what he knows about what Domi's doing and other research that he's done. We did a rate per square foot calculation just to kind of show what that looks like. Okay. Keep in mind, this is not a pure space rent. We're calling it rent here, but it's really a membership fee. And it covers not just the space, but the services they're going to get as well. So if you're in a space, your membership fee includes that. So you're looking at, that looks like a big number for an office, but based on, you know, his experience, they're actually getting, would you say $750 a month?
Yeah, the small offices are $550. This is Domi. Big offices are $750. And the big offices are about the size of our offices.
And there's no other CAM fees or utility fees or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, there may be some depending on if they're using anything special, like if you're in a lab and you're a bio lab and you're using the cell culture lab, there'll be additional cost to that. And Bill, I mean, jump in anywhere in here. But.
Yeah, it's structured. The membership fees will vary depending on the lab and its accoutrements or the consumables used. So as I'm learning more about it, if there's a, you know, if there's a piece of equipment in one lab and not another, we expect that the offices with windows will be more than the offices on the interior, same with the labs, but for the purposes of the pro forma, we've taken a conservative run at the revenue.
And I know you mentioned Dome. Is this comparable to other facilities like ours? And Dome had a different capital structure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That's a great question. I'm just speaking in terms of their office space. I was able to attend a FBIA meeting last month, hosted by the folks at Sid Martin, Carl LaPon is running that organization. I had the ability to tour UCF's Lake Nona labs, mm-hmm. and got their cost per square foot.
So it's covered.
It's our again, we took a little less than 75% of the rate for labs that Lake Nona is getting, and they're sold out. So they're getting about $57 a foot for their labs.
And Sid Martin, last I heard, was around $30 a foot for their labs. Mm. So, you know, there's room here, and it's hard to know. It's hard to know what the market is here yet. And it may be low to start. And as demand increases, we may be able to get it up higher. But we just want to be conservative out of the gate.
What are we thinking about relative to consumables with labs? Because I know we, even at the college, I got the technical side of it, and with the labs, that I have to review that annually, and I get the board approval because, like everything else, everything is going up. So I have lab fees that are going out of the roof this time when I think about usage, because it costs us more to make these things available for students. So having some strategy about consumables and how much one intends to use. We do it by person. I don't know if some of the folks that will be coming on will have multiple people that will be responsible in going into the labs. Something to consider because it's a driver.
I appreciate that. And in some more sophisticated longer term labs, they actually use consumables as a revenue line because they buy it as a nonprofit and they make that available to members with a small administrative fee. We don't anticipate that and have not run that into the pro forma, but that could be a something that we provide to members.
Yeah, and also remember, these are businesses, they're not students. And where our expectation is that they're paying for their own supplies.
If you're thinking, okay, well, then that's a different story. I thought that we were making them available. If we're not making the consumables available, then.
It depends. I mean, and then we'll have to look at that to see if that's a service we can provide where it makes sense, like buying pipettes or whatever they call them in volume, if that makes sense, rather than these guys having to have their own deliveries
or cylinders of gas or things like that.
Yeah. But even gas, I think we want to put as much on them to do themselves as possible. Because that's not, they need to learn how to be a business. And now if there's services we can consolidate and find a way to get reimbursed for, we'll do that. But generally speaking, the intent is that we put it on them. We're doing that right now in the lab in here. They get their own gas deliveries, although we're the doorman. But we're shipping and receiving. But, you know, again, and that's the service we can provide. We can be the shipping receiving people, you know. And the administrative, some of the administrative stuff, the post office, the, you know, whatever. We can do some of that. But generally speaking, we want them to stay on the, stand on their own 2 feet, pay their own bills, and do all that. So,
Ron, this is based on full occupancy. What would you anticipate occupancy would be after 12 months?
We've got that covered, Dave. That's you're right where we're going next.
All right.
But we want to talk first of kind of just about the rates. And then, so here, well, you got the spreadsheet open, Bill. We've learned a new trick here. We can actually be working on the spreadsheet at the same time. See, it says Bill's in it. That's pretty cool. Okay, so this is kind of a little more detail and based on a three-year pro forma. So we're projecting in year one, 50% occupancy, in year two, 75%, in year three, 90%. Okay, and again, we think that's pretty conservative based on the work we're doing in advance. But again, you don't know till you get there.
And Ron, if I may, we've had three unsolicited inquiries to move into the lab in the last 2 weeks.
Yep.
Including one yesterday.
We had
tell
one.
Them we're almost full. They need to go ahead and start paying us.
Well, they would move. Yeah, they would move in today.
We have one that could probably occupy a good chunk of the whole thing. I mean, they want like 6 to 25 people. Now, that's not exactly the 6 is what we're looking for. The 25 is when we're about ready to kick you out. But it depends on what they're doing, how they're doing it. But
yeah,
that's the kind of interest that we're getting because people are seeing there's real stuff here.
Well, so, and the state of Florida is running out of lab space, which is good for us. Yeah, hopefully.
Okay, so that's, you know, so we just took the space plan and stuck it in here and did the percentages to get the revenue pieces. And then on top of that, we've got co-working space for 50 people. We think we can sell probably more than that because it's not actual space per person. They're going to be there at all hours and all over the building, you know, break rooms and conference rooms and whatever. But that's a conservative number. Meeting space and events, Bill, talk about events. And again, these are monthly numbers, by the way. So,
yeah, again, this is based upon both facilities like Domi and also rate sheets from folks around the state. That a typical policy is that you wouldn't have religious or political groups in, but you might let certain your members hosting events, nonprofits hosting events, other folks in the park needing access to space.
And then the incubation and seminars?
That would be some of the training programs that we have, including SBIR training that we've got upcoming, running cohorts, whether it's directly or through partners.
And we're going to skip the fundraising for the moment because, first of all, this sheet's not correct on that. I don't think it is. Okay. But we'll come back. That's our plug. Okay, that's the number we got to raise to make this thing work based on the current pro forma. And we summarize all this on the front sheet, but this is a little bit more in the detail. I mean, Bill, keep going. Talk about what you got here.
We're looking at the team that we'll need out of the gate, and then we add a couple of heads as we grow. One's a community manager, the other is a metrics and reporting person, because we have a tremendous amount of activity. As Governor Dr. Moore may know, and reporting on the grant side. And so anyway, we've got layered headcount. And on the in-kind piece, that would be the notion of personnel support from the institutions in town or funded grant-funded positions part-time positions. We will have a summer tech fellow from FSU that is fully funded by FSU.
The FAMU
yeah.
discussion that we had.
Mm-hmm. Right. You can see the software startup win. Access control is for the 24-hour access to all facilities.
It also helps advantages, you know, the reserving conference rooms and all that stuff.
All the collection of fees and access to systems. We've taken a look at comparable facilities, and Ron also looked at the rates for the buildings in the park to try to get a guesstimate on things like water, electricity,
those kinds
of things.
So we have a 40,000 square foot building, heavy HVAC, you know, hood, so more electricity, more water, maybe not so much. What we did is we looked at the Johnson and the Morgan building back in 2018. We're both pretty heavily occupied and pre-COVID, and that's about 60,000 square feet. We just took pretty much the total of those two and said, that's what we think that's going to be for a 40,000 square foot building. It's a rough guess. And these systems are more efficient. You know, we've got a bunch of split systems out there. We've got some I think, very efficient systems.
But you got lots of glass.
Yeah, but we're going to get roller shades.
I mean, I know how much we spend on some of the glass buildings are, they consume some heat.
Oh, is that right?
We actually, the topography is a benefit to us because we face north on a pond. And then we're sort of on a downslope, and we've got those beautiful oak trees in the front. So we
get some shading.
So we'll get some shading from the south. Yeah, but it's we will get some sun.
So just in terms of the spreadsheet, I see the monthly for year 1, 2, and 3 and the annuals in column C. The annual number is what?
Yeah, don't worry about that yet.
Don't worry about what?
Don't worry about the annual numbers yet. I got another sheet over here that will show you that.
All right, so we're only looking at the monthly numbers?
Yeah, we're just kind of trying to build to these monthly numbers and in a detail. We've got some summaries over here that will, I think, show you what you're looking for.
All right, can you scroll back to the top then?
Yeah.
And what I did was I approached it more from a retail perspective. What is going on in the market? And then we sort of baked it into the financial model.
But just so you can see where we're going, this is the sort of the summary. Then once we get there, this is the annual summary, with the totals of each of those. So, you know, we'll come back to that. As a matter of fact, I see already we have a problem. We added some stuff at the end and didn't get that on the summary. My apologies. This is called just in time, but not completed.
All right, so right there.
Okay.
Scroll up a few lines. Right there.
And you've got us basically fully staffed in year two.
Yeah.
So that could, if we needed to, that could extend past that term if we don't need the people in that.
That's exactly right. That's anticipating those increases in volume.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So basically for the first 3 years, we're holding everything in constant dollars. We're adding some things because from year one to year two, we add positions, but everybody is at a constant year one.
No, actually, we baked that in right here.
Yeah.
So personnel, you got a 4% increase.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we plugged the total in down there.
Okay.
So that's a monthly. These are monthly numbers, right. Obviously.
Okay.
We didn't do that on the other expenses, but we did it on the wages.
Okay. And I'm tracking them. Keep going.
Okay. But you did make me see the big error that I have in this, but. So keep going on the operating maintenance expenses bill.
Yeah, again, the data communications based upon fiber and rates that our others are paying currently. Again, we took the information that we had from actuals a couple of years ago to come up with some of these estimates.
And I look pretty close. I think that's.
You think they're realistic?
Yeah. And I said along, we're going to be at $1 million in expenses.
Yeah, no, and I think we're going to need to raise $1 million a year in sponsorships, grants, and fundraising. And I believe that is not unreasonable based upon what is being done elsewhere and my experience.
Now, is that North Florida Innovation Labs fundraising or is that LCRDA fundraising? It doesn't matter.
Go ahead. It could be both. However, because of our nonprofit opportunity, I anticipate that it's North Florida Innovation Labs taking the lead unless there is some unique opportunity for the research park having some preferential opportunity related to the funder criteria. And there will be opportunities for Innovation Park to apply for funds that might support or be a sub on something, let's say across the state university system, that the nonprofit wouldn't. I would say the nonprofit takes the lead the majority of the time.
Right. And this goes back to the lease and how we structure the lease and how to, or it may not just be the lease. There also could be, we talked about this, operating agreements between staff leasing, that sort of thing. When at some point I'd like to have IPTLA stand on its own with its own payroll and its own, you know, all of its own staff. Right now, you know, bills paid out of LCRDA, but eventually I think it should be self-contained as much as possible. But in the interim, there may be some agreements back and forth to deal with efficiencies of, you know, managing the thing. But once the thing is up and running, how do we make sure that the money flows correctly, you know, as we need it to? How do we make sure we keep the 501c3, you know, qualified? So those are things that I'm thinking about, is how to make sure all those
and play so out correctly. What obligation do we have as LCRDA to deficit fund NFIL should it not be able to meet its operating expense and debt service? And where does that fall in priority to the previous conversation of a potential default? It doesn't happen often.
Yeah, that's a very good question.
It is a good question.
Yeah.
I mean,
can I restate that question?
Please go ahead.
Yeah.
Instead of obligation, is there an opportunity for LCRDA to cover the shortfall?
Yes, there is an opportunity, and that is
so I understand the opportunity side. I'm more thinking of the protection side of if what's our obligation. Like if this becomes, assume for a moment that things go wildly wrong for some reason that's outside of our control. And now our operating expenses we're not even able to meet operating expenses with operating revenue, much less debt service. I mean, I'm talking about some catastrophic, we're in trouble. What's our protection between LCRDA and this?
They are two separate legal entities.
Okay.
Okay. And to my knowledge, there it is not an affiliate relationship. It's not a subsidiary. It is a standalone legal entity. Now, we have taken certain approaches to dealing with Sunshine Law because of the close relationship of the boards and the appointing authority. But, and this is obviously a question for Melissa, but they're separate legal entities.
Okay.
So
there are two very relevant questions. One is the opportunity, and one is the obligation.
And now, in business, people plan for these kind of things, especially big investors. And they don't move money from one entity to another entity because you're breaking that veil when you do
right.
That. So do we have the opportunity somehow, if there's a shortfall of $300,000 in a year, can we pull it over there without?
I mean, we already have set up a loan agreement between the two.
Okay.
So now it's limited right now, very limited. But yes, that would be, you know.
So we could do it. That's a good way of doing it. Okay.
And that's kind of the key too, is to make sure you do it where separate boards approve things like that. Yeah.
So one way to think about how does that play out? Well, what happens if somebody else comes into the market, completely new player who builds a new innovation lab off of Macomb Railroad right there in the downtown core, and all of a sudden they become very attractive alternative, and we find that half of our occupancy wants to head that direction. Now, it might only last a year or two, but that's a pretty big hurdle to overcome. I think that's the type of thing we need to be on. We need to pay attention to how we're going to financially respond in a moment of difficulty.
Well, you're thinking of another COVID event.
Okay. There was that big disruption.
Although that drove occupancy in labs, because you can't do that remotely.
Yeah.
So that doesn't argue your point. I acknowledge we need to contemplate worst case scenario and sort of from a catastrophic perspective.
One thing that we've seen happen in Tallahassee, Ed Murray likes to talk about this. Tom, you've seen it a lot. When one successful venture comes into Tallahassee,
yeah.
We get 12 more immediately. So we expect this to be successful, and if this is successful, then the other not yet. When this is successful, we need to anticipate that other people are going to want to play in that sandbox.
The price of poker will have gone way up for them at that point. I mean, this is probably the least amount you can build a lab for in town. Especially given the cost of the dirt, right? And so it doesn't argue your point. You're exactly, we should keep an eye on competition. And, you know, everybody's looking for lab space. FAMU's looking for lab space. FSU's looking for lab space. Sid Martin's doing an expansion down in Boca Raton and Scripps. But there's no way to do it fast or cheap.
And Ron, remind me how did we, what's the deal with the land? Did we contribute the land? Or contribute our interest in the land because we don't own it?
We will be leasing. So the land, we own the building, we lease the land. Okay, we're using that leasehold interest as security on the mortgage. We will be leasing the building to IPTLH.
Okay. And LCRDA still owns the land?
They still lease the land.
I mean, yeah. The leasehold interest from the state is held
yes.
by LCRDA.
Where it's we could do a sublease on the ground. I don't know if we need to, but yeah, I don't think we would, because we're really just leasing the building.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah, we do the same thing with other buildings. We just lease the building.
But in the loan documents, it seemed to me from a prior conversation that the security interest included this, the lease in the dirt.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's because the security interest, the loan is with LCRDA.
Yes.
So IPTLH is only interest is in the building.
Yep.
And leasing the building. So
okay.
I know it sounds complicated, but it's, and it is. I'm trying to figure out why we got $935,000, but I apologize. We kind of did this last minute and it's not all flowing through apparently. But
what's orders of magnitude correct? I mean, that's
yeah, it's I think you get the gist of what we're talking about here. Oh, I know why it's different. Okay. Yeah. Because we have, it's not consistent year to year, it goes up. Okay. So that, and that's why, because this doesn't really reflect the change in occupancy on every year. This is just like a static annual data here. So that's why I didn't really even want to put it there, but this is what the annuals 3 year looks like. And I'll have to go back and adjust this, but.
Is that debt service based on 3 million, not 4 million?
I actually did it both. I've got them separated here. Good point, Dave.
I think you did interest only.
Yeah, so.
On the first year.
Yeah.
On the 3 million.
So according to the loan, we have basically 15 months from the certificate of occupancy before we have to make the first payment. So this isn't, you know, fine tuned, but, and the first payment is interest only. So the first year is interest only. So that's what I calculated here. So here's year one interest. That's the 100 and whatever. That's in the number that goes in the first year debt service. Okay. The, and then after that, this is, and that's monthly. So this is the monthly debt service combining the $3 million payments, the payments on the $3 million and the payments on the $1 million amortized over 12 years.
So go back to the other page that.
Yeah, I got it. I'm still not sure certain that that cash flow summary is correct, but because we had intended to plug to make that come out. All right, what are we doing? It's not responding. Okay. Bill, can you see if you can get out? Are you out?
I just closed it. Yeah, I'm out now.
Oh, here we go. It's just you just pop up. You talk about this, you can see things are sort of lagging, but let's see if I can shut something down here. Nope. Anyway, I apologize. The computer's starting to freak out here, but the main numbers, and we can the main thing you need to see is those the two lines that are in bold up there. This is
we gotta get $500,000. To grants and sponsorships.
Yeah, and in the second
it goes
year
up a little bit.
Yeah, like, and then it comes down with some of the occupancy increases. So this is when the principal payments start, and then this is as the occupancy increases. So going back to what he was saying, he needs to raise $1 million a year,
minimally. Yeah, and I've been taking a look at the structure of other organizations and. This is, I did some work when athletics raised the $15 million for the indoor practice facility and a breakdown of the different sort of naming opportunities. I met with Southern Scholarship Foundation, both in terms of how they're structured and also a hypothetical collaboration for summer STEM, sort of some programmatic conversations as well. And Governor Moore can probably speak to how they're, and I've taken a picture of the plaque on the building and on the ground floor of your office. I do think that there, I don't want to diminish the amount of money or the critical path to sunsetting that as quickly as possible. I do believe that there is an intense interest in these facilities and these programs. And we're also seeing a tremendous amount of activity focused at FAMU, and our relationship with FAMU, I think, positions us extremely well with many of the federal funding agencies. So anyway, I think we can get it done.
Bill, I think about what David Teets over there at FAMU and that old Grant Wright machine that he has become. Is there any effort that we can engage right now with like reoccurring funding opportunities so that we can almost, you know, start applying for that and get that in the queue and know that those multi-year grants that will allow for known funding?
Yeah, the EDA is about to release another grant like Build Back Better, one of those things. And so the answer is yes. There will clearly be those opportunities, and we have a handful that we're chasing immediately through DOD agencies, through the USDA.
At 1 o'clock, we're on a webinar. I'm guessing that's Kristen. Kristen,
hi,
is
Ron.
Hey,
yes.
Welcome.
And our grant writers actually.
Sorry, I'm running very late.
I think we're about done, Kristen.
Our grant writers also waiting for FAMU.
I thought that might be the case. The Regional Planning Council meeting just finished.
I'd be happy to catch you up to speed at another time if you want.
Sounds great. If you don't need me right now, I will log
off. Okay, no problem.
Thank you.
So I apologize. This thing is freezing up on me. I can't get to where it needs to go, but.
So
is Kristen an added member to the committee?
What's that?
Is Kristen an added member to the committee?
She dropped off.
Yeah, we invited her to, she is not on the committee. We invited her to attend because she's the chair of the Infill Oversight Committee.
Okay. I didn't know why she was attending, but just curious.
Okay.
So we have, scroll back up real quick. Let's look at an annualized.
It's not responding.
Okay, so.
That's my point.
Got it.
What I will do is I'll tighten this thing up and I'll put it back out as part of the next the board agenda, give it to everybody so they can see it in hard copy and have a chance to look at it.
But for very broad macro brushstrokes conversation, we have at stabilized occupancy, just under $1 million of revenue. At stabilized occupancy, just under $1 million of operating expense. A little less than $500,000 in annual debt service, which is why we need about $500,000 of sponsorship and in kind each year, correct? I mean, that's the economics that we're looking at.
Yeah, I think so. But it really shows you the importance of trying to figure out how to get rid of that debt service before we open the door.
Well, and I would take it a step further because it's if we have $410,000 of annual debt service, but we're saying we need $500,000 or $600,000 of sponsorship income each year, that means that we need sponsorship income in order to
excess sponsorship to pay that down.
No, that includes the debt service.
We need the sponsorship income. We need about $100,000 of sponsorship income each year keep ourselves cash neutral.
Right. Yes.
And so that's that's a discussion that the board, the full board needs to really understand and grind through, because that's a.
Well, the other side of that is to raise a couple of million dollars in the next 2 years so that we don't have as high a debt requirement.
I understand, but Dave, my point is that the we need more than, assume for a moment we had zero debt service, we still need sponsorship income in order to break even.
Yes, yes, and that is the intent of this facility, running it as a nonprofit. We want to keep, we want to leverage the nonprofit to keep the cost to commercialize and grow businesses as low as possible.
And Bill is working on that plan.
Yeah.
Okay. This is not, we're going to wait 2 years and figure it out. This plan starts the day that we break ground.
And I appreciate that we're not trying to create a 20% IRR on this. But it behooves us, it is incumbent upon us to make sure that we have a viable business. And so I love the idea of sponsorship income. That needs to be annual gravy. We need to make sure that the rent structure of this building carries the operating expense of this building. Because when we don't have sponsorship income, for whatever reason, we still need to be, even as a nonprofit, we need to be a going concern.
I don't disagree with that premise. I will tell you that other facilities operate identically and are driven by sponsorships. And the ones that are not are supported by research institutions like USF, UCF, UF, and others. So,
and if you recall the Tuff presentation, they stressed heavily the need to have that those kind of contributions to make the formula work. It can't just be, it can't run like a business, unfortunately.
Or like a comparable private lab that you'd see in Boston or something like that. The price is significantly higher.
I mean, we can aspire to that, but especially out of the gate, I don't think we're going to be able to get the kind of rents that we, or membership fees we're going to need to make that happen.
There is a chance that we get some heightened interest in some of our buildings here, though, because of the lab, too.
No doubt.
So inside my benefit a little bit more.
Right.
Yeah, I would think that could happen.
And you know, Bill has a plan, and there's some big dollars out there we think we can get, and he's already working the plan.
And that's grant stuff, maybe.
It's things like naming rights.
Also, yeah. I would tell you, like, can we engage some of our folks, even in a pro bono? I would think that some of them would in the community and helping us to develop that sponsor naming assignment kind of benefit plan that we could go out there and start having conversations on, because that's how they do it. I mean, I look at the work down at Indian River with Dr. Massey that was there. That there's not a building that they had left that wasn't named. That guy had everything under it. It was crazy, that model that he put in place.
Well, if you look at the FSU College of Business, every doorway is sponsored, and that is typical of the labs. I've had the opportunity to see and tour.
So those could have, you know, those naming rights could have annual revenue streams dedicated or prepayments or however we need to structure it.
Yeah, I am familiar. It's a different deal altogether, but I know the numbers that donors pay associated with indoor practice facility, Champions Club, and other, you know, Kathy Wood Art Capital, just put her name on a building in Tampa. So again, it doesn't mitigate risk talking about it. It will when we get commitments. And so what I've been working on and talking to Ron about is taking a look at what other folks are doing, not only from a space and money perspective, but also in terms of governance, meaning that what happens if you got a bad actor? Under what circumstances do you take a name off a building? And do you keep the money and do you not keep the money? And so what's nice is other people have cracked the code on this, either in advance or having to remove a name after the fact. And so in short order, on or around the time that we break ground, it's my hope that we have language that we can present to the board, and then the starting gun for fundraising goes off. The other thing that we intend to do is the state of Florida is conspicuously missing in our capital stack. And although we did not get funding this year, we got a commitment to run funding next year. And I do think there's an opportunity, like the work that was done with the Autism Institute, to get recurring funding at that point from the state. So get a little help on the capital side, and then position ourselves as an economic engine that we are and will be, so that we have some recurring funds through the state.
And in my opinion, that is the big win.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to that point, that is the big win. I'm fully confident that you have a plan. I will feel more confident on our operating side when some of those pieces are locked in place, because we are relying on it in order to cover operating expense.
This is a complicating factor, and Ron and I have talked about it generally. There will be a relationship between this building and the lab, and the work that we're doing next door as both an economic engine for LCRDA and synergy with the lab.
And that's a good segue into, I think if we can get into our reports, Bill and I.
Hey, well, before you do that, I don't think we've taken action.
There's no action required. We're just reviewing this so that it has to go to the board for final approval.
Okay.
Any debt issue requires the presence of the representatives and the presence of the affiliated higher ed institutions. So make sure you're in attendance at the board meeting.
Okay.
And I don't mean to cut it off, but I
know
Bill and I have at 1 o'clock, which is to tell us about other funding opportunities. So
let's keep going then.
Okay. And if nobody has any other questions, but as I said, we will tighten up the that pro forma and get that out to you so you can study it to your heart's delight.
What are you projecting a groundbreaking date to be now?
We're probably, I mean, if you're talking about actual groundbreaking, well, the ceremony is probably mid-May. But yeah, so we were saying 45 to 60 days. But I got to actually, that's a good point, Dave. I did have something I wanted to update you with before we got to the staff reports. I do have a timeline. Hopefully the computer cooperates. Yeah. Let's share that for Dave. So I showed this to you guys the last time, and I've updated it since. So we did get the approval on the 23rd to negotiate with the contractor to get the price where it needs to be. We did not have any appeals. We have started that negotiation, I explained. We did get approval for our 6-month extension. I think I shared that with y'all at some point. I can't remember who I tell what anymore. We did get, I don't think Melissa mentioned this, but the EDA did approve the loan, that mortgage agreement. So their end of it, they've been provided at least with the initial drafts of the FSU loan. So we feel pretty good, like there's really not going to be a big process with them to get that approved.
We have this meeting today. Oh, the Research Foundation is meeting today. They may be going on right now. And hopefully we'll get that approval. They, our understanding was that they didn't have to have the final drafts. They had their conversation with the FSU leadership this morning with the drafts that they had going. They would present today and could get approval, but wouldn't necessarily need additional approvals for tweaking the loan documents.
And I saw Dustin Bailey before I came over here today. He was presenting in that meeting at 9 a.m. with the Research Foundation, and it sounds like they approved it. So we should be good.
Okay. We have the Oversight Committee next Wednesday. We'll go through the details of the negotiation and the value engineering piece. The contractor has asked for a notice of intent to contract, which I've not heard of before, but not to award, but to contract. And he wants this, and I told him we could do something, but it'd have to be conditioned on all this other stuff that's got to happen. He wants it so that he can get his subcontractors locked in, which makes sense. But I'll present that to the Oversight Committee for that. I didn't want to do that today. I want to have something drafted as well. We have been in touch with the Leon County Administration. Melissa just reviewed their draft resolution for the commission. That's done. I had a call from Al Rosenzweig and Heather Peoples to I presume it's about this. We're going to talk in the morning about whatever else they need for me to provide, but they have to have all that done by April 1st. And then that'll go to the commission on the 12th, and then we'll have our board meeting on the 7th. And so hopefully by the 12th, we're done and we can, this is not exactly right. We're going to have to, it's going to take us a few days to get through the contracting part. The contract's done. I mean, it's been approved. It's just a matter of, filling in the blanks, but that format, the form of the contract was included in the bid package. So there shouldn't be anything to do there. And that is it. Really, the key date is we got to get to is the 12th. And I asked Cam to work with the contractor to figure out the schedule of what happens after the 12th and how quick can we turn this around? When can we have an actual groundbreaking ceremony, which is something that Bill's working on planning. But that gets us to the critical date, the critical next date, which is the 12th. My understanding is the intent is to put that on their consent agenda. So it shouldn't be a big deal. I will attend even if it's on consent just in case, but
that's smart.
You never know who's gonna decide to put something on the agenda. But anyway, that's what that schedule looks like.
Okay.
I wanted to in my report just give you a quick update on a couple of things we're working on. We have had a sudden spike in interest in what we're doing out here, and it's good stuff. But one of the things I want to talk about is one of the interests is from FAMU for space in the Morgan building. And they want to use it for, I apologize, I didn't get a chance to pull this down, but it's the Department of Biomedical Engineering.
Bioengineering.
Yeah, bioengineering. And it's a small department, but they actually want to put a couple of labs in the Morgan building and on the first floor. So we've started kind of down the road of, give me some numbers, figure out if you can do this, share some prints. I've asked them to detail what it is they want to do, because I want to bring this back to the board, because, first he's like, well, we want a classroom, and I go, we don't do classrooms in the park. He goes, well, maybe just graduate students or something, that they could still do classrooms on campus, but they don't have a space for this place. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the distinction of where they're at now and what they got to get out of, but they just don't have the space.
Well, my understanding is FAMU has or is demoing their building.
Oh yeah, that's what, okay.
Yeah.
so they have to find a place to go. So they're highly motivated.
And they're an accredited program, and without facility, they lose the program. And this was a legacy program that is outside or peripherally related to the FAMU FSU College of Engineering. It's a separate program.
So I'll have more information for you on this as quick as I can get it. But that's an opportunity there. And I don't know if this If we eliminate the classroom piece, it looks a lot like some of the other stuff we've done with FSU in terms of like the Department of Anthropology and those sorts of things, which I think makes a lot of sense. And if FAMU is willing to pay to have two labs, two 500 square foot labs put into the first floor of the Morgan Building, that would be a phenomenal addition to have. And they're looking at possibly leasing the rest of the space that SBDC used to occupy. So I'm trying to get those specifics nailed down, but that would be an interesting addition to that space.
And that gets us not too far from being full.
That's 4,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Also, the Northwest Regional Data Center just got passed in some legislation, the taking over the state data center operations in Southwood. And now, when she first said that, I went, oh no. That means you're going to move your stuff. No, they don't have enough space in either place to accommodate what they need to do as one. They're interested in moving 70 people into the Morgan Building. Okay, so now I have competing interests for the same space because we've done that before with the IT services. We put about 120, I think it was, in the rest of that space. And we have less space now than we did back then. So, but that is pending the governor's signature on however that was specified, probably in the budget, but, and you know, obviously subject to the veto pen.
That would fall under Timber.
Yes. So anyway, so that's pending. FSU has expressed interest in some potential temporary space, and I'm hoping they'd be interested in the Johnson Building. Now, I haven't heard from them in a couple of weeks since I provided that information back to them, but it has to do with one of the buildings that they're going to have to do some remediation on. But they inquired about that space. We have one I've mentioned before that I'm working with OEB on is a potential office space to get them through to building something. Again, it's still pretty pie in the sky, but it's back in their court to kind of spec out what it is that they really need from us in terms of space. Again, though, they will be competing potentially for, you know, Morgan Building space and Johnson Building space.
And tell me again how many square feet are available on those two. I should have been roughly out maybe
about 10,000 each.
Okay.
And then we have another 10,000 here in the Collins Building, roughly, which we are working with Stephanie to get moving on our renovations down there. And I did finally get commitment from OEB to get us paid so we can start doing that. I didn't even have to go to the mayor. It was what we had talked about before. I don't remember who it was, but didn't have to go that route. And then yesterday, we got a phone call, first from the provost office at FSU, and then from Barney Bishop, and then from someone else who wanted to stop by and talk to us about a potential deal. I don't want to go into the details on it yet. I'm going to reach out to OEB. They don't necessarily want to deal directly with OEB, but I tried to encourage them that there's value in doing that. But they want to put a proposal together for a potentially a 50 to 100,000 square foot facility in the park. Mm-hmm. And once I get, an appropriate confidentiality agreement for an economic development project, and which is one of the reasons to work through OEB. Then we can get into some more of the details, but it's promising. It's a lab-based business. Mm-hmm. It is an international business, and we're competing with some other areas. But this person is acting as an intermediary, and one is the one who will be putting a full proposal together to the company. Mm-hmm. And so what we've got to do is come up with the value proposition for Innovation Park and the community. So that's what we found out yesterday. So if you wonder why I don't have everything done, because they called, met with them, and knocked on the door. They said, we're at the golf course having lunch. Can we stop by? So we did.
Is Barney interested in it as the lobbyist for him or what?
No, Barney was just vouching for the credentials of the intermediaries.
Yeah, we got a couple of calls suggesting
these folks are the real deal.
Yeah, and we actually, I've met with these folks before. They have done other deals in the area and in the state. And in the past, our community has not been able to respond as they would have liked. So
Ron went through the options for space, and there is a consensus that let's move forward in the discussion, and we'll have our part where we talk about space options and all of the connections that the community provides, and they'll have a couple of other tabs in the proposal.
Yeah, that was the weeds they didn't really want to get into. Now, keep in mind, they also said that, you know, if we couldn't accommodate them directly in the park, other options would be on the table. But I think they really like the park. I like the fit for the park with what they're doing. I think it fits real well. It's not necessarily the commercialization piece, but it fits real well with a lot of the stuff that goes on in the park. I think there'd be a lot of synergy with engineering and
HDMI.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff just fits with what they're doing. So, and I think it's a lot of jobs.
Magnetic related?
Not. I don't want to get into the details of that just yet.
All right.
I think it's a good fit, and certainly once we get the details, we can present that to the board, because obviously the board has to approve, you know, anything like this. And I'd like to get it to a point where I can provide the information so you can all bless it as a permitted use. But anyway, it looks pretty good. That's all I have on the prospects. I did want to touch on a couple of other things real quick. I know we got out of time. Bill, your time's getting cut short. Sorry,
that's fine.
And you may have to go sit in on that webinar.
Okay.
Professional fees, as I mentioned, we have an annual budget for professional fees of $38,000. I got a bill last month for $10,000 from Melissa. And I'm not questioning you,
right?
But we're doing a lot of stuff, and we're not done yet. We've, including that $10,000, we've spent 29 year to date. So we got roughly $9,000 in the budget for professional fees. So I'll be coming back and letting you know what that is, but just know we're spending the money, and it's obviously important. We got to do this stuff, but that's one budget item that's going to be out of whack. Now, the good news is I think once we get past the loan docs and the start of construction, I don't foresee needing her for a lot of other things just yet, but that's yet to be seen. I had a call with Ricardo Schneider, and I don't know if Dave, if you've heard any more, but they expect to begin construction sometime after April 1st. They have to be in operation by April of 2023.
Same thing I've heard, Ron, from him. I heard the month of April, early part of April is what I heard.
Yeah, so they're, I mean, I haven't seen anything moving out there, but they should be moving pretty soon. We have the LCRDA nominating committee next week. We can probably touch base on Monday or something if you got time to maybe look through any of the resumes, but or applications. But we have one really good candidate, I think, that we want to consider highly, that could bring a lot to the board. I also received a call from Steve Evans with another name, someone to look that within the next year that may want make sense to get on the board. So we'll keep cultivating those things. I also had a meeting with Steve Evans. We had lunch, and I was able to update him on all the great things that are going on right now. He's very excited for us on what we're getting done. That's all I got.
Ron, thank you.
I'll go quickly. I think we covered the most important parts related to our activity. I'll touch on a couple of others. As mentioned, I was at the FBIA conference. I had the ability to, I mentioned touring Lake Nona, also toured UCF's DOD facility. So it's a combination facility that they have with the DOD. What's interesting is we have an ability to collaborate with them as soon as we would like. These other institutions are are more than willing to collaborate on particularly multi-site DoD sorts of projects. We'll begin our SBIR, our STTR training late April, May. The first example of that will be looking at a Navy opportunity that they have as a, for instance, that will be functionally on a Startup Wind platform and facilitated by myself, Michael Tentnowski, and two others, so that we have ongoing capacity to do these cohorts throughout the year. Keith Bowers is also looking at the platform, so it, SBDC may be running their cohort on the same platform. Let's see, we talked about preliminary groundbreaking. Everything goes the way we expect to mid-May. Working on several grants. We have a letter of intent in with the Department of Energy. We're working on several grant opportunities, both directly and as a sub. Let's see. We have a couple of good prospects to replace our marketing outreach person in the interval we've been operating with a contract resource. That's obviously an important role. I attended the launch tally event yesterday. And I think the momentum that the community has will benefit us well. It's another opportunity to tell our story, including the fact that there's not a facility like this, and tech is not just IT anymore in this area. So Eddie's doing a good job with that, and I think there's considerable momentum. Also working with ARPC on some opportunities. We'll be attending the Hemp Summit in April. We're not sponsoring that, but we're engaging in conversation. I think there's a high probability of state or federal support for industrial hemp in the region. And because of our relationship with FAMU and AgTech, I think we have opportunities to benefit. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Seems like there's so much going on, and y'all are keeping the balls in the air. So again, thank you for that. It's a lot. So
I appreciate it.
There's 3 8-hour days.
I know, right?
Three-hour periods in a day.
You're using them all, yeah.
Nice work, Bill and Ron, both of y'all. A lot going on.
And y'all are killing it. Thank y'all. Mm-hmm. We got some prospects too. Abby's got another prospect for us. Lawrence is looking at two offices here. So
I know you only got 1 minute. What's in nine right now?
New energy.
So it's full?
No. We still have a few offices. Our old offices are open. Although he did, I don't think we finished that. He was interested in taking one of these other offices. I've slept since then. Either he did or he was going to take another office in there. He's grown. He leave it open. I think eventually he'll fill it out. So.
Any other business? Motion to adjourn?
Move, sir.
Second.
Thank you.
Good meeting, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.